வக்ரதுண்ட மகாகாய சூர்யகோடி சபப்ரபா நிர்விக்னம் குரு மே தேவ சர்வகாரியேஷு சர்வதா சிவசக்த்யா யுக்தோ யதி பவதி சக்தஹ ப்ரபவிதும் ந சேதேவம் தேவோ ந கலு குஷலஹ ஸ்பந்திதுமபி அதஸ்த்வாமாராத்யா ஹரிஹர விரிஞ்சாதிபிரபி ப்ரணந்தும் ஸ்தோதும் வா கதமக்ருத புண்யஹ ப்ரபவதி.
Shri Sai Ram. At the outset, my most loving and prayerful salutations at the divine lotus feet of our most beloved Bhagwan, Shri Satya Sai Baba. Dear listener, you are tuned to Radio Sai Global Harmony on Asia Stream, bringing you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, the love and the message of Bhagwan, Shri Satya Sai Baba. Good morning. Greetings and loving Sai Ram on this Thursday on the 4th of June 2020, and with me, Team Radio Sai Sunil, welcoming you to this morning segment, Divine Glory, on Thursday live from Prashanthi Nilayam. Let me first read out to you today's Sai Inspires message. Why is it very important to moderate our speech and practice silence in thoughts and words? Bhagwan endearingly explains to us today, and I quote, "Reduce too much speech. Tell yourself, O tongue, you know good taste and you are a sacred organ of the human body. Always utter God's name like Govinda, Damodara and Madhava. Eye commits only one sin, that is bad vision. Ear commits only one sin, listening to bad things. However, the tongue can commit four sins. It speaks untruth, blames others, carries tales about others, and talks too much. In order to guard ourselves from the tongue committing these sins, resolve from today to talk less. Talking too much hurts one's mind and destroys one's memory. When you talk a lot, your energy will diminish and weaken your nerves. When your nerves are weakened, you will be tired and your tongue will not be under control. It will also bring you disrepute. Your friends will call you a bore when you approach them. Hence, our ancestors gave so much importance to silence and observed silence over long periods of time." Unquote. This was taken from Chapter 21 of Summer Showers in Vrindavan, Volume 1978, from the year 1978. Dear listener, today as the world continues with its social distancing and lockdowns due to the spread of coronavirus, let us also continue to take all the precautions mandated by the government and the health department, and also maintain personal and community hygiene. And also let us continue in our prayers at our own places for world peace. And let me now play for you the mantra or the verse from the Krishna Yajurveda Taittri Aranyaka. And the efficacy of this mantra is in destroying all the harmful germs and viruses.
Om Atrina Tva Krime Hanmi Kanvena Jamadagnina Vishvavaso Brahmana Hataha Krimina Gumraja Apyesha Vristapadir Hataha Atho Mata Atho Pita Atho Sthura Atho Kshudra Atho Krishna Atho Shveta Atho Ashatika Hata Shveta Bhissah Sarve Hata Ahara Vadya Shrutasya Havisho Yata Tat Satyam Yadamayamasya Jambhayo Adadhami Tatahitate Khantan Rasi Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
That was the mantra from the Taittiriya Upanishad. To be specific, it is from the Krishna Yajurveda Taittiriya Aranyaka. And the efficacy of this mantra is in destroying all the harmful germs and viruses. And this mantra is chanted daily in the morning and evening in the Mandir prayer sessions here at Prashanthi Nilayam. And for those of you who don't know, let me tell you that these prayer sessions are streamed live for all to listen on Radio Sai's Prashanthi Mandir Live YouTube channel, Sri Satya Sai Baba Facebook page, and of course, Radio Sai's Asia stream and Telugu stream, both at 8 a.m. in the morning and 5 p.m. in the evening. So you could log on at these times to listen to our other prayer sessions. The time right now in our studios is 50 minutes past 9 a.m., that is Indian Standard Time. And today in Divine Glory, I have lined up for you readings from the English version of the holy book, Sri Sai Satcharitra, written by Sri Hemant Pant, followed by the second part of a conversation from our archives with Dr. Ramanathan Iyer, a senior cardiac surgeon serving for very long at the Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Medical Sciences, Prashanthi Gram. And in conversation with him is Professor G. Venkatraman, the former Vice Chancellor of the Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning and also the former Director of Radio Sai. But first, readings from Sri Sai Satcharitra. Sri Sai Satcharitra is an account on the life and teachings of Sai Baba of Shirdi, written by Sri Hemant Pant. We are thankful to Vasanthi Sundaram for reading out the contents from this holy book and to Veeramani Kannan for the melodious musical support. Wishing you all a happy, holy and blessed Thursday and a wonderful day ahead. Also praying to Lord Almighty that the pandemic caused by the coronavirus disease be eradicated and all the suffering come to an end at the earliest. Samasta lokaha sukhino bhavantu.
Kushal Chand of Rahata. It is said that a dream which we get in the wee hours of the morning generally comes true in the waking state. This may be so, but regarding Baba's dreams, there is no restriction of time. To quote an instance, Baba told Kaka Sid Dikshit one afternoon to go to Rahata and fetch Kushal Chand to Shirdi, as he had not seen him for a long time. Kaka Sahib accordingly took a tonga and went to Rahata. He met Kushal Chand and gave him Baba's message. On hearing it, Kushal Chand was surprised and said that while he was taking a noon nap after meals, Baba appeared in his dream and asked him to come to Shirdi immediately and that he was anxious to go. As he had no horse of his own nearby, he had sent his son to inform Baba. When his son was just out of the village border, Dikshit's tonga had turned up. Dikshit then said he was sent specially to bring him. Then they both went in the tonga back to Shirdi. Kushal Chand saw Baba and was very pleased. Seeing this leela of Baba, Kushal Chand was much moved. Ramlal Punjabi of Mumbai. Once a Punjabi Brahmin of Mumbai named Ramlal got a dream in which Baba appeared and asked him to come to Shirdi. Baba appeared to him as a Mahant, but he did not know his whereabouts. He thought he should go and see him, but as he did not have his address, he did not know what to do. But he who calls anybody to him also makes the necessary arrangements for the same. This happened in his case too. The same afternoon, when he was strolling in the street, he saw a picture of Baba in a shop. The features of the Mahant he saw earlier in the dream tallied exactly with those of the picture. Then, on making inquiries, he came to know that the picture was of Sai Baba of Shirdi. He went soon after this to Shirdi and stayed there till his death. In this way, Baba brought his devotees to Shirdi for darshan and satisfied their wants, material as well as spiritual. Bow to Sri Sai. Peace be to all. Chapter 31. The passing away in Baba's presence of Sanyasi Vijayanand, Balaram Mankar, Noolkar, Megha, the Tiger. In this chapter, Hemant Pant describes the passing away of certain devotees and a tiger in Baba's presence. Preliminary. The last wish or thought that a man has at the hour of death decides his future course. Sri Krishna has said in Gita, "He who remembers me in his last moments, come verily to me, and he who meditates otherwise at that time goes to what he longs for." We cannot be certain that we can entertain a particular good thought at our last moment, for more often than not, we are more likely to be frightened and terrified by death. Hence, constant practice is necessary for enabling us to fix our mind on a desired good thought at any moment. All saints therefore recommend us to remember God and chant His name always, so that we may not be perplexed or perturbed when the time for departure comes. The devotees on their part surrender themselves completely to the saints, fully believing that the saints would guide and help them in their last moments. A few such cases will be noted here. Vijayanand. A Chennai sannyasi named Vijayanand started on pilgrimage to Mansarovar. En route, on hearing Baba's fame, he halted at Shirdi. There he met one Somadevji, Swami of Haridwar, and inquired from him about the Mansarovar trip. The Swami told him that the Sarovar was 500 miles from Gangotri and described to him the difficulties of the journey, plenty of snow and the change of dialect every 50 course and the suspicious nature of the local people who give a lot of trouble to pilgrims on the way. On hearing this, the sannyasi was dejected and cancelled the trip. Then, when he went to Baba and prostrated himself before him, Baba got enraged and said, "Drive out this useless sannyasi, his company is of no use." The sannyasi did not know Baba's nature. He felt discomforted, but sat there watching things that were going on. It was the morning darbar, and the masjid was overcrowded. Baba was being worshipped in various ways. Some were washing his feet, some taking the tears or holy water and drinking it heartily, and some touching their eyes with it. Some were applying chandan and some scents to his body. And all were doing these things forgetting the distinction of caste and creed. Though Baba got enraged with him, he was filled with affection for Baba and he did not feel like leaving the place. Vijayanand stayed in Shirdi for 2 days when he got a letter from Chennai stating that his mother was very ill. He felt very dejected and wanted to be by his mother's side, but he could not leave without Baba's permission to return home. The omniscient Baba, knowing the future, said to him, "If you so loved your mother, why did you take sannyas? Attachment makes misuse of an ochre garb. Go and sit quiet at your lodging. Wait with patience for a few days. In the vada, There are many robbers. Bolt your doors and be very vigilant. The thieves will carry everything. Wealth and prosperity are transient, and the body is subject to decay and death. While knowing this, do your duty, leaving all attachment with the things of this world and next. He who does this and surrenders himself to the feet of Hari will get free from all troubles and attain bliss. The Lord runs and helps him who remembers and meditates on him with love and affection. Your store of past merits is considerable, so you have come here. Now, attend to what I say and realize the goal of your life. Begin from tomorrow the study of Bhagavat. Do 3 saptas, that is 3 readings during the 3 weeks, conscientiously. The Lord will be pleased with you and will destroy your sorrows, your illusions will vanish, and you will get eternal peace. On seeing that his end was approaching, Baba prescribed this remedy and made him read Ramavijaya, which pleases the God of death. Next morning, after bathing and other purifying rites, Vijayanand commenced to read Bhagavat at a secluded spot in the Lendi garden. He completed 2 readings and thereafter felt much exhausted. He returned to the Vada and stayed in his lodging for 2 days, and on the 3rd day he breathed his last on Fakir Baba's lap. Baba asked the people to preserve the body for a day for a reason. The police afterwards came and, on making proper inquiries, gave permission for the disposal of the body. It was buried in a proper place with due rites. In this way, Baba helped the sannyasi and ensured him sadgati. Balaram Mankar. There was a householder devotee of Baba by named Balaram Mankar. When his wife passed away, he got dejected and, entrusting his household to his son, left home and came to Shirdi and lived with Baba. Being pleased with his devotion, Baba wanted to give him a good turn to his life, and he did it in this way. He gave him 12 rupees and asked him to go and live in Machindragad in district Satara. Mankar was first unwilling to go and stay away from Baba, but Baba convinced him that he was giving the best course for him and asked him to practice meditation thrice a day in the Gad. On believing in Baba's words, Mankar went to the Gad. He was much pleased with the serenity, pure water, healthy air and the surroundings of the place, and began to practice the meditations as recommended by Baba. After some days he got a revelation. Generally bhaktas get revelation in their samadhi or trance states, but in Mankar's case, he got it when he came down to his ordinary consciousness from his trance. Baba appeared to him in person. Not only did Mankar see him, but he also asked him why he was sent there. Baba replied, "In Shirdi many thoughts and ideas began to rise in your mind, and I sent you here to bring your unsteady mind to rest. You thought that I was in Shirdi with a body composed of the 5 elements and 3.5 cubits in length. Now you see and decide for yourself whether the person you see here now is the same you saw at Shirdi. It is for this reason that I sent you here." Then after the period was over, Mankar left the Gad and proceeded to his native place in Bandra. He wanted to travel by rail from Pune to Dadar, but when he went to the booking office to get a ticket, he found it very much crowded. He could not get his ticket soon when a villager with a langoti on his waist and kangli on his shoulder turned up and said, "Where are you going?" "To Dadar," replied Mankar. Then he said, "Please take this Dadar ticket of mine. As I have some urgent work here, I have cancelled my Dadar trip." Mankar was very glad to receive the ticket and was taking out money from his pocket when the rustic disappeared in the crowd. Mankar tried to find him out in the crowd, but in vain. He waited for him till the train left the station, but found no trace of him. This was the second revelation Mankar got in a strange form. Then Mankar, after visiting his home, again returned to Shirdi and remained there at Baba's feet, following his bidding and advice. In the end, he was very fortunate to leave the world in the presence of Baba. Tatya Sahib Nulkar. Hemant Pant gives no particulars regarding Tatya Sahib Nulkar, except the bare mention of the fact that he gave up his ghost in Shirdi. A brief summary of his account that appeared in the Sai Leela magazine is given here. Tatya Sahib was a sub-judge at Pandharpur in 1909, when Nana Sahib Chandorkar was Mamlatdar there. Both met often and exchanged words. Tatya Sahib did not believe in saints, while Nana Sahib respected them. Nana Sahib often told him the leelas of Sai Baba and pressed him to go to Shirdi and see Baba. Nulkar finally agreed to go to Shirdi on two conditions. He must get a Brahmin cook and he must get good Nagpur oranges for the presentation. Both these conditions were providentially fulfilled. A Brahmin came to Nana Sahib for service and he was sent to Tatya Sahib, and a fruit parcel containing 100 beautiful oranges were received by Tatya Sahib, the consigner being unknown. As the conditions were fulfilled, Tatya Sahib had to go to Shirdi. At first, Baba was much enraged with him. But, by and by, Tatya Sahib got such experiences that he was convinced that Baba was God incarnate. So he was enamored of Baba and stayed there till his death. As his end was approaching, sacred literature was read out to him. And at the last hour, Baba's Pada Tirth was brought and given to him for drinking. Baba, on hearing of his death, said, "Oh, Tatya went ahead of us. He won't be reborn." Megha. The story of Megha has been already described in chapter 28. When Megha died, all the villagers followed the funeral procession. Baba also accompanied them and showered flowers on Megha's body. After the rites were performed, tears flowed from Baba's eyes, and like an ordinary mortal, Baba showed himself overcome with grief and sorrow. Then, covering the body with flowers and crying like a near relative, Baba returned to the masjid. Many saints have been seen giving sadgati to men, but Baba's greatness is unique. Even an animal-like tiger came to Baba's feet for being delivered from demerits. It is this story which will be narrated now. Tiger. 7 days before Baba passed away, a wonderful incident occurred at Shirdi. There came a country cart and stopped in front of the masjid. A tiger was on the cart, fastened with iron chains, with its agonized face turned to the rear. It was suffering from some painful malady. Its keepers had been taking it from place to place and making money by exhibiting it. It was their means of sustenance. They tried all sorts of remedies to cure it from the malady it was suffering from, but all in vain. Then they heard of Baba's fame and came to him with the animal. They caught it down with chains in their hands and made it stand at the door. It was naturally fierce, besides disease-ridden. So it was restless. The people began to look at it with fright and amazement. The keepers told Baba everything about the animal and with his consent brought it before him. As it approached the steps, it retreated on account of the awe of Baba and hung its head down. When both Baba and the tiger saw each other, the tiger got onto the step and looked at Baba with affection. Immediately it moved the tuft of its tail and dashed it thrice against the ground and then fell down senseless. On seeing it dead, the keepers were much dejected and full of sorrow. But on proper thought, they came to terms with it. They considered that as the animal was diseased and nearing its end, it was meritorious on its part that it met its death at the feet of Baba. It was their debtor, and when the debt was paid off, it was free and met its end at Sai's feet. When any creatures bow down their heads at saints' feet and meet death, they are liberated. Unless they have got a good store of merit on their account, how could they have got such a meritorious end? Bow to Sri Sai. Peace be to all. Chapter 32. In Quest of Guru and God. Fasting Disapproved. In this chapter, Hemat Pant describes two things. How Baba met his guru in the woods, and through him, God. And how Baba made Mrs. Gokhale, who had made up her mind to fast for 3 days, eat Puran Polis. Preliminary. In the beginning, Hemat Pant describes the sansar, or the visible world, by the allegory of Ashwattha tree, which has, in the phraseology of the Gita, roots above and branches below. Its branches are spread downward and upwards and are nourished by the gunas, and its sprouts are the objects of the senses. Its roots leading to actions are extended downwards to this world of men. Its form cannot be known in this world, nor its end, its beginning, nor its spot. After cutting this Ashwattha tree of strong roots with the sharp weapon of non-attachment, one should seek the path beyond treading, from where there is no return. For traversing this path, the help of a good guide or guru is absolutely necessary. However learned a man may be, or however deep his study of Veda and Vedant may be, he cannot reach his destination safely. If the guide be there to help him and show him the right way, he would avoid the pitfalls and the wild beasts on the journey move aside. Baba's experiences in this matter through the story which he gave out himself is really wonderful, which when attended to will give you faith, devotion and salvation. The quest. Once 4 of us were studying religious scriptures and other books, and being thus enlightened, we began to discuss the nature of Brahma. One of us said, we should raise the self with self-efforts and not depend on others. To this, the second replied that he who controls his mind is blessed. We should be free from thoughts and ideas, and there is nothing in this world without us. The third said that the world is always changing. The formless is eternal, so we should discriminate between the unreal and the real. And the fourth, which was Baba himself, urged that bookish knowledge alone is worthless. He added, let us do our prescribed duty and surrender our body, mind and 5 pranas to the Guru's feet. Guru is God, all-pervading. To get this conviction, strong, unbounded faith is necessary. While discussing in this way, we 4 learned men began to ramble through the woods in the quest for God. The 3 wanted to make the quest with their free and unaided intellect. On the way, a Vanjari, a man who trades in certain things such as grain by carrying them on bullock, met us and asked, it is hot now. Where and how far are you going? We replied, in the woods. He inquired, on what quest are you bound? We gave him an ambiguous and evasive reply. On seeing us rambling aimlessly, he was moved and said, without knowing the woods fully, you should not wander at random. If you want to walk through forests and jungles, you should take a guide with you. Why do you exert yourselves unnecessarily during this hot noon sun? You may not give out to me your secret of the quest. Still, you can sit down, eat bread, drink water, take rest, and then go. Be always patient at heart. Though he spoke so tenderly, we discarded his request and marched on. We thought that we were self-contained men and needed nobody's help. The woods were vast and trackless. The trees therein grew so close and tall that the sun's rays could not penetrate through them. So we lost our way and wandered here and there for a very long time. Ultimately, through sheer good luck, we came back to the place from where we started. The Vanjari met us again and said, by relying on your own cleverness, you missed your way. A guide is always necessary to show the right way in small or great matters. And no quest can be successfully carried out on an empty stomach. Unless God wills it, no one meets us on the way. Do not discard offers of food. Served dish should not be thrust away. Offers of food should be regarded as auspicious signs of success. On saying this, he again offered us food and asked us to be calm and patient. Again, my companions did not like this unsolicited hospitality and discarded his offer. Without doing any quest and without taking any food, the three began to move out. So obstinate were they. I was hungry and thirsty, and I was moved by the Vanjari's extraordinary love. We thought ourselves very learned, but were strangers to kindness. The Vanjari was quite illiterate and unqualified fellow and belonged to a low caste. Still, he had love in his heart and asked us to eat the bread. In this way, he who loves others disinterestedly is really enlightened. And I thought, acceptance of his hospitality was the best beginning of getting knowledge. So very respectfully, I accepted the loaf of bread, ate it, and drank water. Then lo, the Guru came and stood before us. What was the dispute about? He asked. And I told him everything that had happened. Then he said, would you like to come with me? I will show you what you want. But he alone who believes in what I say will be successful. The others did not agree to what he said and left him. But I bowed to him reverently and accepted his dictum. Then he took me to a well, tied my feet with a rope and hung me, head downwards and feet up, from a tree near the well. I was suspended 3 feet above the water, which I could not reach with my hands or with my mouth. After suspending me in this manner, he went away. No one knew where. After 10 or 12 ghatakas, which is about 4 or 5 hours, he returned and after taking me out, quickly asked me how I fared. In bliss supreme I was. How can a fool like me describe the joy I experienced? I replied. On hearing my answer, the Guru was much pleased with me, drew me near him, and stroking my head with his hand, kept me with him. He took care of me as tenderly as a mother bird does of her young ones. He put me into his school. How beautiful it was! There I forgot my parents. All my attachments were snapped, and I was liberated easily. I thought I should embrace him and keep staring at him always. If his image was not fixed in my eyes, I would better be blind. Such was the school. No one who entered it once could return empty-handed. My guru became my all in all, my home, mother, father, everything. All my senses left their places and concentrated themselves in my eyes, and my sight was centered on him. Thus, my guru was the sole object of my meditation, and I was conscious of no one else. While meditating on him, my mind and intellect were silent, and I had thus to keep quiet and bow to him in silence.
साई गुरुवर की परमानंद सदा to Sight.
Spend the day with Sight.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sight Thursday Live.
Radio Sight Thursday Live.
Sairam listeners, I have good news for you. We have with us in our studios Dr. Ramanathan Iyer. Many of you might have heard our earlier broadcast which featured a conversation with him. At that time I talked to him about how he came to Swami and so on. But today, Dr. Saab, I am going to talk to you in your capacity as a medical man. And not just an ordinary medical man, but an expert who is doing seva in Swami's hospital. As you and I know, but perhaps many don't know, Swami's hospital is an example to humanity in many dimensions, not just the free treatment. That is just one aspect of it. And I'm going to sort of needle you to tell our listeners about all the different dimensions you are personally acquainted with. Where do you think we should start? I leave the choice to you. You can start wherever you want.
At the outset, I offer my most humble salutations to our beloved Lord. Sairam to you, sir. Sairam to all Radio Sai listeners. Basically, I have a scientific training, as you agree with me.
Doctor has to be a scientist.
That being the case, any aspect of life you tend to view with the eyes of a scientist. So in this country, you know about the healthcare system, the availability, how it is provided, and we had basically so-called declared as a welfare state model.
So why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about the healthcare system that obtains in this country? Because many of our listeners don't quite live here. They live all over the world.
See, Constitution provides that every individual has a right of access to quality medical care.
I see. It's in the Constitution.
It provides. But the question is it translating into reality? We have medical institutions dating pre-independence from the Britishers' time, which after independence, they're really very famous ones. And they did produce wonderful work pre-independence. Post-independence, when we sort of said that, okay, these are the citadels wherein our patients should get quality medical care. Over a period of time, somehow we found that it didn't work as it was supposed to be enshrined or guaranteed by the Constitution.
When you say it didn't work, what exactly do you mean?
There are so many things. One is, apart from the budgetary allocations apart, the fact that, as Bhagwan puts it, certain things in life are to be guaranteed to every citizen, as he says, a right to be educated, the right to have a clean, pure drinking water, the right to have health care or medical care. This is a right. You see, the state is not doing any great favor by providing them. It's a right. Every citizen in the country should have it. It's a sad thing, it's not only in this country, over the world if you see, that most of the resources get cornered by a select few.
Yes.
Everywhere, I'm not criticizing in this country alone, it's any place you see. Now, with that concept, you see, let me make it very clear to my listeners that I didn't start off as a Sevadal boy or grew up in the Sai philosophy or anything. But over the period of time, once I started my medical education and I worked in a hospital which was catering to the tribal population of one of the most backward tribal districts of this country, that is the Bastar.
Bastar is very famous.
And our medical college was the referral center for the patients from that place. I saw what abject poverty is. And therein I saw whatever the state government was trying to provide, whatever possible. And even today I claim it with pride that in that state government hospital, with minimum of machinery or technological infrastructure, it was a pure clinical skill of the people working in that hospital which provided excellent medical care to those people. Otherwise, they had nowhere else to go. And that was the only place where...
There were doctors who were prepared to do that kind of work.
Yes, the government professors and the lecturers and readers. And of course, if you see, I think in India at least, I don't know about other parts of the world, in any teaching hospital, if the hospital runs, it's on the strength of the postgraduate students.
That's true. That's generally true in research.
It's the postgraduate students. They have
postdocs, as they say in America.
Yeah, they have to pick up, they have to learn. And that's where you form or your ideas crystallize on what you want to do as a medical man.
Okay.
And when that started, when I started off, and I started off a career in a so-called governmental setup.
Buster Hospital.
No, I was in the Raipur Medical Hospital doing my post-graduation. Mm-hmm. After the post-graduation, I joined a sort of a megalith, I would say, mm-hmm. an 850-bedded industrial hospital. Mm-hmm. And therein I am placed in the intensive care unit.
That is Bhilai, is it?
In the Bhilai Steel Plant mm-hmm. Hospital. And I find that till yesterday, mm-hmm. I was just content with handling only needles and syringes. Here, overnight, I am transported to a scene where I have to do blood gases, analyze blood gases, I have to intubate, I have to handle ventilators. A change in technological scenario within a distance of 40 kilometers. Raipur, where the medical college existed, and Bhilai, where this hospital I joined, just 40 kilometers. One was with the state government, another was governed by, it's a quasi-government under the Steel Authority of India Limited. So, the first reaction I got was, I am inadequate. I am not prepared to handle these things. Then I said, no. Man cannot be subservient to technology or machines. All technology or machines are creations of man's own brain. They have all been created to further expedite or further serve the patient care. So within a week's time, I found that I had mastered all of them.
Because you wanted to.
For any sphere of knowledge, it is a motivation.
That's
and your
true.
Interest. I had that.
You wanted to be good in your profession.
Good, not just in the profession. See, at the end of the
good
day...
Good service.
Good service, yes.
To the patient.
Patient.
Mm.
At the end of the day, I see, am I in any way better than what I was yesterday?
That's
that
true.
Is the answer I have to answer
yeah,
at
yeah.
the end of every
we
day.
We have to do that self-audit all the time.
So, the first 6 months was, I would say that, the golden period, no? Every day I was thrilled that I was a new skill I picked up. So many patients coming in almost near-death situation. I used to rally, fight, work beyond my duty hours, 3 hours, 4 hours, go home late, read up, try to pick up. That thrill, that the sense, no, oh, because of me, that thing came. I was young also, that's another thing. So, this realization that beyond all this, there is a power operating or making you do it, that realization hadn't come. Then came the stark truth that this is catering to a very minuscule section of the population. There lie millions and millions and millions.
That is to say people employed in the steel plant.
Steel plant and their family members, their dependents, that's all. What of in the same area who are not with the plant, what about medical care for them? That was when this question arose, slowly the search started. Disillusionment started. Because I knew that as long as I was in the confines of that high-tech hospital, I am useful. And a stage comes when I become a slave to the machines, wherein my clinical skills which I have honed on gifts given by God, I'll slowly lose them. Because this is a standard, you must have read so many articles which have appeared in the lay press, in medical journals, and even other kinds of journals, in the internet. In US today, that's the cry. The way technology has leaped, the current generation of medical people, majority of them aren't having an exposure to clinical medicine.
Can you explain to our listeners what you mean by clinical medicine?
See, I underwent my postgraduate training in medicine under a professor who used to say that you are sitting in your chair, a patient walks in. Mm. The moment you see him, it should crystallize in your mind that what complaint he's going likely to tell you. And even diagnosis should get crystallized. That was his training.
And he could do that.
He could do that. He has demonstrated it umpteen number of times. And initially when we were new, we were thrilled as if it was some kind of a magic. Or sometimes we used to think that maybe he might have told the patient, he knew the patient already. And to impress us, he would tell that, okay, you come and I'll tell you, this man is going to come and tell this complaint. Or this lady is going to tell this complaint. And this is what you're going to find. What I'm trying to tell you is, see, the sense organs, what we talk as Panchindriya and all those kinds of things. These very sense organs are such wonderful tools gifted to us by God, which today we are slowly forgetting.
Can I just narrate a small story here? It's about a doctor, a friend of our family, Dr. Pai. He is in Bangalore. He was attending on my father in the last stages. And he told me that one day he was going to a house of a friend, family friend of his. an Anglo-Indian family, who were also his patients. And the door was opened by a lady, and he had gone there to return a book. He was not going there on any medical purpose or anything. He was going to London, Dr. Pai, and he wanted to return a book. So he knocked on the door, the lady opened, and she was very rude to him. He was taken aback. He didn't say anything. He flew to London, and first thing he did after reaching the hotel, he called this house. The lady picked up. He said, "Give the phone to your husband." He told the husband, "Take her immediately and do a brain scan." And lo and behold, there was a lump there. I said, "How did you do it? You didn't go there as a doctor. You just went there to return a book, say goodbye, and you wanted to leave." He said, "You know, when you have experience, that's a sixth sense. And I suppose that's what you, the Panchendriya sensitized.
Yes,
it replaces all the instruments."
See, that is where today the American kind of a practice, what they commonly, I'm sorry, I'm not meaning any offense, but that's what is in common medical parlance they say is, a patient walks in, you order a battery of tests. And initially, those tests used to be analyzed by human beings. Now the stage has come when the machine is also analyzing the
tests. But by the way, there is a man called Bill Moyers. He was a big shot in Lyndon Johnson's administration or something. He did a whole lot of studies on holistic medicine. He went to China and he was stunned to find that they feel the pulse for 20 minutes. He said, "What do you need 20 minutes for? Our doctors do it in 40 seconds. He said, "After 40 seconds, he sends you to many instruments. In 20 minutes, we dispense with all those." So that's what you're saying. I've seen that kind of things done by our Ayurvedic doctors. Just Nadi Vaidyam,
yes,
they call it.
Yes, see, what I'm telling is, we had the legacy.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, due to turn of historical events, many factors played a role.
It is just like forgetting multiplication and using a calculator.
Yes. Or, I'll give you another very, very commonplace example. I'm talking of animals other than human beings. Any animal you take, a newborn baby of any land animal, you put it in water, it immediately swims. It immediately swims. You put a puppy in water, it will swim back. I'm talking newborn pup. A newborn human baby, also put it in water, it swims. That means, instinctively, it is present there. Because the previous 9 months, it has been swimming in the mother's womb, in the amniotic fluid. So you put it in water, it swims. Why is it that after six or eight years or 10 years, why do you want to join a swimming pool class and learn swimming?
I never knew this.
See, I remember I was in high school. There was a documentary, some Russian documentary. I happened to see that. It was a very short documentary. You know, I was so much thrilled. What was it? Some person with this kind of an idea in the brain took a lady in labor in a sterile tank. Temperature at the body, 37 degrees, and the temperature, sterile water is there. She was squatting inside the tank. Beautiful, excellent photography for that times, if you ask me. Still vivid in my memory. She has the labor pain very smoothly, no analgesia, no anesthesia. And she delivers, and such fantastic shots, you see the baby delivered out in water. Now, for us in medical science, the first sign of life in a baby is the first breath.
Yes.
The first breath it takes and it cries.
Yes.
So that's where we say, okay, time of birth, so and so, this much time we said. This baby swims up neatly, comes to the surface, takes its first breath, again dives down. It is a footage I'll never, never, never forget.
With the umbilical cord still.
With the umbilical cord still intact, attached to the mother's placenta.
Jesus Christ.
So then I realized, see, herein you have nature at its best. Today you have obstetric analgesia. People want to have a delivery without pain. Where are gynecologists and obstetricians for dogs, for cows? So that goes on to prove that there is above us, there is a power, you call it. Shakti, you call it. God, you call it. You may, nomenclature may vary.
As Gandhi said, there is an indefinable, mysterious power that pervades everything.
Everything, sir. So that being the case, I make this plea even today when I teach my postdoctoral students in our hospital. I say, machines are fine. I have full reverence and respect for them because they have made our lives easier. They have made our diagnosis easier. They have made patient care easier. But please don't become subservient to them. You have your God-given clinical skills and observation. See, I have had so many such examples. I only once in my life, I was, you can say, I wouldn't use the word reprimanded, because the professor under whom I was working, he was known for his very nasty tempers, was very strict. I was in the first year of my post-graduation. First 4 months I worked in his unit in the male ward. The next 4 months I was supposed to go to the other unit. Impressed by my working, he said, the next 4 months also you'll work in my unit in the female ward. This is just why I'm telling you about observation. A 65-year-old lady comes on a Sunday duty. I'm on 24-hours duty. With some vague complaints of vomiting 3-4 times. She's a known diabetic. So for us in the medical field, somebody diabetic coming with vomiting means you have to rule out certain complications of diabetes. I did the same, got her admitted. And it was standard practice those days that all diabetics should have an X-ray chest done. I had got that also done. That was a Sunday. So the X-ray will come back to me only on Monday morning. Monday morning the professor comes for round. Mind you, she was a 65-year-old lady. Complaints were only vomiting and history of diabetes. Just when we are reaching her bedside, he asked, Dr. Iyer, what is this case? I start telling the history. That radiology man brings the X-ray and immediately this professor snatches it from him. One whole page of Ramayana, the professor of radiology has written on that. He just glanced, he kept it aside, just asked me one question. Did you examine the breast of the lady? I said, no sir, sorry, I didn't do. Why, he asked. Well, partly because of, you know, the problem. Unless and until she complains of a specific complaint in any part of her body, we naturally in ladies, we avoid. He didn't say anything. One of my colleagues was a female resident, postgraduate, female postgraduate. He told her, just now go examine her left breast. She needn't even examine. She just removed the upper clothing just little bit. There was one small sticking plaster there, belladonna plaster. She asked, why have you put that? That lady said, why do you bother about that? That is last 2 months, it's like that. One small nodule is there. I have just put the plaster, it will go off. The professor came, he said, remove the plaster. He just saw, examined, he said, just now take out an aspiration biopsy. I want the report by evening. He didn't tell me anything. He went off. Evening the report came and he said, the report comes, come and show it to me. Report said, papillary duct carcinoma of the breast.
Oh God.
I went and showed the report to him. He took out the X-ray and he said, here is a professor of radiology who has seen just the X-ray chest, and he writes in that certain findings on the X-ray chest, which he says are not suggestive of tuberculosis. People can mistake it as tuberculosis. So imagine the level of expertise of that professor of radiology. Kindly rule out malignant infiltration into the lungs. And he has detailed the organs in which you had to rule out. This lady had a cancer of the breast which had spread into the lungs. So normally this professor, for such kinds of things, the punishment is for 1 week you are out of the ward. So I was prepared. Anyway, I had done a mistake, not knowingly. You'll be very surprised. He didn't shout, he didn't scold, he said, if you want to become a good doctor, a good physician, there's only one keyword, learn to be observant.
What was his observation?
No, it is not his observation in that particular case. I am talking, this is the man.
Generally.
In general, see, that is when from my idea of learning medicine changed. Any patient who comes in, whatever, before he opens his mouth, before that itself, you form an idea in your brain, okay, what are the likely complaints this patient is going to have, what he or she is going to tell you. Then he or she tells you the complaint. You do your examination. That's you are using the God-given sense organs. You draw a conclusion. And I should be thankful to all those great teachers under whom I could get this coverage, because even today, I have been known to be very conservative as far as ordering investigations are concerned. Because I just don't feel there is a need for them. Why to order it? Just because it's available to you doesn't mean that every patient should get it done.
That's correct.
More so in this country, where cost constraints is a truth. You shouldn't recklessly keep on. It's like, I can tell you, there are current practices in many hospitals in this very country, wherein you go for a headache, come back with a CT scan. I'm not exaggerating. I can give you umpteen number of such examples.
So if I can paraphrase you, the first suggestion is, let us teach the doctors to be observant and not rely so much on instruments, and more on God-given skills.
Yes.
And senses.
Yes. The second aspect, for underdeveloped and developing countries, for
both whom, of them,
for both these categories, developed countries okay, but definitely underdeveloped and developing countries, for whom getting reach of most of the technological advances or keeping up to the updated in the lesbian is difficult.
That's true.
Difficult. In these countries, you definitely need medical personnel who are really well trained in their clinical skills. And I can vouch for it that in 95% of cases, if you do a good history, a good examination, you clinch the diagnosis. 5% margin, okay. You can always have this way, that way. You can have some intriguing case or some combination. That's complex. But 95% of the times, if you have been honest to yourself, if you gave a patient hearing to the patient majority of the times tells you what he's suffering from. He will actually lead you to what is his problem.
Okay, here I want to ask you a question which intrigues many people, and I'll tell you later why I'm asking this. Let's say a lady brings a baby, 4-month-old baby. Baby cannot speak or anything. The mother says something. Mother may be right, mother may be wrong. As a doctor, how would you examine, find out what the baby is really suffering from? Because the baby is not in a position to tell you.
Two fields of medicine. One is veterinary science. Other is pediatrics. Other is pediatrics. These are the two fields wherein your God-given senses are tested to the utmost.
I didn't realize that veterinary science falls in the same bracket.
Yes. A dog doesn't come and tell you what's its problem. It will be lying listless.
Yes.
And the veterinarian comes and he'll say, oh, it has an upset tummy. Other dog, he'll say, it has got, particularly, I have had a lot of craze for dogs. So, but for some reason, I could never have one myself. But many of my friends and I used to go and share my love in their houses. I have seen particularly these breeds like German Shepherd and all. They are prone to develop pneumonias. They are prone to develop cancers. Yes. And it's so painful seeing them, in that stage. And a veterinarian coming and this dog is lying listless and he says, oh, get this thing done. Most probably it's renal failure or it is pneumonia, and it will be that. So then I used to be really thrilled in those days.
Mm-hmm.
Same when I entered medicine, I realized that a pediatrician, I would say, is the utmost as far as using his skills is concerned. A baby, the only response it can give to suffering is cry.
Yes.
And he has to shore up all available resources given to him by God to arrive at what is the problem. I'll give you since you put this pertinent question, a very small example I'll give you. In the previous hospital where I was working, a couple came with the child howling like as if it's going to be killed. They tried everything possible. They pacified, tried to feed, comforted him. They brought to the casualty. The casualty doctor saw, examined even. He thought, okay, it must be some colicky pain in the abdomen. See, the parents were educated parents. They had already given medicine for that also before coming to the hospital. Still, the baby is not stopping to cry. Fine. I was just passing by. Mind you, I am not a pediatrician by training. I am trained in internal medicine. I just saw this. I thought, okay, some kind of an emergency. Just walk in. If any help possible to render, I walked in. And I saw this kid. It was howling and it was sort of throwing its legs here and there. That was when
How old was the baby?
That's four and a half months, maybe 5 months at the most. But a good chubby kid. The only thing upsetting the child, I don't know, it was, you may say the sixth sense or whatever it may be. I just said, you strip the baby just to see. Naturally, parents bring with all layers and layers of clothing. I said, just I want to see. The culprit was nothing but silver waistband which they had tied, that sharp edge of it was pricking the skin of the child. It was removed, the cry stopped. Kid didn't need any medicines. So what I mean to say, I am not telling this or narrating this to receive a pat on my back. What I say is, most important, you can't get panicky in such situations. You have to maintain your cool. Another example in this regard. 6-year-old boy brought with history, he was playing with some nut and bolt. That thing went and got stuck in his throat. The father brings the child to the casualty. The casualty doctor really panicky, what to do, call the ENT surgeon, notify the theater, keep everything ready. And the father is getting, this boy is getting breathless. And it can be a very dangerous situation, a foreign body in the airway, it can kill the child. The nurse who was watching all these things, again you may tell, what made her to react like that? She just came, lifted this fellow, turned him upside down, gave one good slap on his back, and the nut popped out. Incidentally, she was awarded by these plant authorities for this gesture. You may call it presence of mind. But most importantly, see, you have to be aware throughout.
Talking of awareness, let me tell you why I asked that question about the child crying. This happened maybe 30 years or so ago. I was in Bombay in the Baba Atomic Research Center, and I had gone to Chembur to call on a friend of mine who incidentally is today the director of the Center for Advanced Technology in Indore, a premier laboratory in the atomic energy chain. I knocked at his door, he was not there. And I said, let me, you know, it's a flat. So he said, let me knock on the opposite door to find out where my friend Vinod Sani is. I heard a child crying. So he said, let me not disturb. And then there was a lot of crying. I walked away. Then another time I came to Vinod Sani's house, and he said, I'll introduce you to my neighbor. And then he's a doctor. And Dr. Saab, I came, there was a lot of crying noise, so I didn't want to disturb. He said, there was no one. But I heard a child crying. Then he said, oh, that, I have a tape recorder. And the tape recorder had the child crying. He said, what kind of a crazy man is this? People use tape recorders to hear music. Then he told me, you know, the way a child cries is a very good indicator of what its problem is. So I have taped a lot of children crying with known problems, and I listen to it to familiarize myself, so that the moment I hear a cry, I zoom in on what the problem is. I had never heard of this.
No, but this...
What I'm trying to say is, this was an excellent lesson to me on observation. I mean, I'm a great admirer of Sherlock Holmes. And he said, look, this man has made an art of this.
This even, our grandmothers had it.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen my own grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen my sisters who are much younger to me when they are brought up. And so many times my grandmother would say, hey, this cry is cry of tantrum. This cry is of hunger. She was not a very educated or scholarly lady, but she had that power of observation. So what I say is, this was known to our people. Today, you see, the one is human-to-human interaction itself is disappearing. Within a family itself, it's absent. What to talk of within the society? So that's what I feel our Swami's organizations and all our Swami's teachings or messages are aiming to get that back.
Then now why don't we talk a little bit about Swami's hospitals and how various aspects of what you have been talking about are manifest in various ways.
See, there are various levels at which you can analyze this hospital.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be, of course, please don't misunderstand me that I get biased because I am working in the hospital.
No, not at all.
But I have this ability, you may call it the journalistic skill or whatever you call the journalistic temperament, wherein I can dissociate myself from the environment in which I am working and view it at a distance.
I will call it scientific because you have to be both detached.
You have to get detached.
That's true.
So when I analyze that, see, one which everybody knows in the world, okay, this is the first hospital which provided high-tech medical care free of cost.
Yes.
Everybody knows. Now it's published. Somebody knows. That's okay, one aspect of it. Very great service. I am not denying that. Even Bhagwan himself had stated in his discourse that it's a role model for others to emulate. That's right. Just one aspect of it. I have many other aspects which I want to highlight.
Please.
Two, the kind of people who came by chance or by their own volition or by whatever means, once they are into the system, they start working. For working there. Mm-hmm. Let them be doctors, let them be nurses, let them be other paramedical staff. Many of them need not come as devotees.
That's true.
They have just come, okay, here is a hospital, I'll start working. I myself didn't come here as a primary devotee or anything, or somebody wedded to the Sai philosophy. I came with a pure open mind, and my appointment was just a 1-year contract. Now, during that period, you start seeing the environment, you start interacting with it, and then slowly you start realizing that there are so many things unique in this. One very big aspect, which it's not I am stating it, I think all of my colleagues who have been working for more than 3 years in this setup will agree with me, at whatever level they are working, is a self-transformation. The way you tend to see suffering of human beings, the way you approach, it undergoes a transformation. And mind, this is a silent transformation going on. This is brought about by the kind of work atmosphere which is generated in the hospital. This is a very silent thing. And let me tell you, even those who have worked and left this place for whatever personal reasons, wherever they have gone, they are spreading the seed of this work culture there also. This is a way of what I call, I nomenclature it as the Sai work culture, spreading in another way. The second one. Third, cleanliness is integral to health. Today, many visitors, I have seen visitors of all hues, all colors, all positions, scientists, bureaucrats, politicians, ministers, doctors. The first thing which strikes to them, which did strike to me when I came here for my interview, was the absence of antiseptic smell in the hospital. Even the best of the hospital you go in this country, I don't know, abroad. I have gone to some of the best hospitals. The first thing it will assail your nose is the antiseptic smell will be there, and you know that you are in the hospital.
That's true.
In fact, my mother, in the previous hospital when I was work and come, first thing she will say, please remove all your dress and all, have a wash and come, because
I don't like that smell.
That smell is there. It makes me feel sick. That's absent. Impeccable cleanliness, which is one of the most fundamental for health, which I feel should be there in every hospital.
How is it maintained?
There. I am coming to that point. I am coming to that point. Now, it's a very complex interaction here.
Mm-hmm.
You have the dedicated sevadals. To me, if you ask me, they are godlike figures. It is the ultimate practice of surrender. Seva done with the right perspective, with the right mood. It's the ultimate practice of surrender. Sharanagati. See, today, if I am posted that, okay, you take care of the cleanliness of the toilets, it shouldn't come to my mind, oh, I am a postdoctoral and I am a cardiologist, how can I be doing that? Once that feeling comes, the seva bhavana goes off. Hats off to this innumerable number of sevadas whom I have seen in the last 11 years, who have all been in some way teachers to me.
Can you describe the kind of people who come for doing seva?
I won't, of course, for reasons you well known, I won't be naming.
No, we don't want names. Anyway, names don't make any difference.
I have interacted with persons of the stature of advocate generals.
Advocate general.
Persons of the very high ranking government official. Mm-hmm. Very high ranking officials in various factories or industries. Doctors who didn't even reveal their identity that they were doctors. And working in the CC of the hospital.
Wearing a blue scarf and all that.
Wearing blue scarf, carrying urine pot and the bedpan for the patients.
Regular sevadal duty.
And it is just by chance that maybe towards the end of the duty, because you became very friendly, that the person reveals to you that I am also a medical man. He happens to be much senior than me. So, for us working in that atmosphere, seeing the sevadal do that itself humbles us. It's a big lesson in humility. It's a big lesson in self-surrender.
Can I narrate one thing that happened in my class? We were talking about sevadals doing duty in our student hostel. Many do there. And one student said, sir, many sevadals work in our hostel. One day I went to Gokulam cow shed. There was one sevadal who was cleaning a cow and all the dung. I not only discovered he was a scientist, there's a book he has written which is published in Germany, which is there in our library. I happen to know this man because he is a co-author of that book along with me. I immediately recognize. But I was stunned to know that he was doing work in the cow shed. Oh, this is very nice to hear.
See,
this is of course very unique. You don't see this anywhere in the world.
World. See, what I am telling you, this is again an example and a message to everybody in the world. No work is inferior.
That's
every
true.
Work is divine. Cleaning a toilet is in no way inferior.
That's why Gandhi used to insist on that.
What I say is, Gandhiji was a one-man army.
Yes, and that's true.
Gandhiji, with due apologies I am doing, Gandhiji was a one-man army. Herein you have army of millions of Sai devotees.
Yes, and they do it day after day, year after year.
And not just on coming here. There are millions of them I know who are silently doing it at their places.
That is true. That is absolutely true. The other day I saw a video which was shown privately to the Seva group. People in Bihar, Jharkhand, Sevadals, going to a tribal area and dressing the wound of lepers. Who will go and touch a leper this day? You are absolutely right. Sevadals are real angels.
They are angels. See, to me, if you ask me, in many respects, it's very easy to criticize, let me tell you. That is basic human nature. But this thing is, at various times, in various ways, my personality has been modified or changed for the better by interacting with an example set by some Sevadal I saw. It may be the way he fed food to a sick patient. It may be the way he just covered the patient with the blanket. It may be the way he provided the urine pot or the urinal to the patient. Each, to me, because that's where, since you said observation, all of these are integral in patient care. See, when you become a patient, it includes me also. That is a time when you actually realize your helplessness. That is the time you feel that there should be somebody caring for you. This what my professor used to say as TLC, tender loving care. It's all there in textbooks of medicine also. Sadly absent in practice in most of the hospitals around the world.
But not so in Swami's hospital.
I don't say it's 100%, but there are many who are regularly doing it. Seeing them, the others who are new to the system, they are undergoing a transformation. See, it's at so many levels. Food. Please, I would request, see our dietary. I came from a hospital which had 850 beds. And on any day's count, it will be 950 plus with additional beds put. For such a big hospital, the food was served, all varieties of food. It was a quite, so everything neat and good, and but quite mechanical thing. Okay. See, I had one lesson from a professor. He said, never identify a patient by his bed number. This is not army.
Or the police.
One of my colleagues did that. He was turned out of the ward. Because he said, sir, that bed number 26 has... He was out. He said, he is an individual, he's a human being. You may say Mr. or Mrs. or Miss or so-and-so, currently in bed number 26. That's a different thing. So that it's easy to associate and then tell. Herein we are dealing with human beings. People have pets in their house. They spend thousands and thousands of rupees on grooming the pet and feeding the choices food. And why should a human being, a co-brother of yours or a co-sister of yours, eat from the garbage can? Why should they move around with filth? Why should they move around with thirst? Why should they go to bed with empty stomachs? We are not asking for the moon. Minimum basic. See, it's been my dream. I don't know. I dare to dream, I definitely say. Some point in time, see, there are so many governmental hospitals and setups in this country. Slowly, our Sevadal brothers at their places should take up some kind of regular voluntary care inside the hospital.
But Dr. Saab, that is happening. Oh, not, of course, perhaps on the scale you would like. But I do know, for example, in Vishakhapatnam, there is a hospital called King George Memorial Hospital or something. The toilets get cleaned on Sundays when our Sevadals go. This is a fact. I have talked to the people. They go to the mental asylums to the point. Now there is one senior man who advises the state of Andhra Pradesh on mental health. He says the Sevadals must be used in all the mental hospitals in the state. And similarly, prisons. In one prison, they got permission, they were allowed to work for 1 year. At the end of 1 year, their permission expired and so they stopped going. You know what? The prisoners told the jailer, bring those chaps and ask them to conduct bhajans. So the prison official came to the district president and said, please continue the service. So in a manner of speaking, this is happening, but the words you have spoken today, I am sure, will stir a lot of our listeners. And I am sure it will have its own impact.
Another aspect I want to put.
Please.
See, I have been that way. I feel that I am really fortunate that I got to interact with some of the most deprived lot of our society by treating them as patients.
Here in Swami's hospital.
Who possibly would never have ever got this in their whole lifetime. Mm-hmm. Maybe 10 lives over they wouldn't have got. Number one. Two. They got it, it was delivered to them with a feeling of love. Not with a feeling that, oh, just because you are deprived, we are giving it free of cost. So as if we had an upper hand. Never. Never were they made to feel that it is because of their deprivation that they are coming to us. This is possible only because of Swami.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, We have seen much more of life than what I have seen. Even small, petty charity work people do.
Here, I think I should cite one example which is very interesting for listeners and also for you. You know, 2-3 years ago, we had this big earthquake in Gujarat and Swami sent a lot of relief. He also sent a few people from here to stay there for 20 days to 1 month in personal supervise. And one of those persons told me when he came back, oh, many other people also came to do service, NGOs and all that. They would stand in the truck and throw things. And the fellows would shout, don't think we are beggars. Because of an act of nature, in the wrath of God, we have lost our house and our possessions, and that's why we are in the streets. We have not come here to beg. He said, on the contrary, the way our seva was distributed is very different. With more respect and much love they distribute. In fact, I have got a photograph which shows a sevadal combing the hair of a small boy who is seated in a chair. I thought he was giving him a haircut. So this gentleman said, next time he will do even that.
No, see, this may seem as very insignificant or small acts.
No, it is not.
This is what I have been trying to emphasize in all possible fora where I get a chance. What may seem as very small, insignificant acts, they carry such, they touch such a tender chord in the hearts of the recipient.
Absolutely.
See, herein I am at a hospital, creation of Bhagwan, where there is no kind of a differentiation as far as patient care is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
No differentiation of caste, creed, color, religion, nationality, state, whatever you say. He or she has come as a patient. He or she has a problem. We are small players in this divine game. Whatever possible, we use our skills maximum possible by facilities provided by him. We are doing nothing great.
Whatever little skills we are utilizing. That also has been given by him.
By him. And we are just handing it over. When you realize that, then you realize how small you are. In his grand scheme, you realize how small you are. And each of this, see, I'll tell you in my experience of almost 11 years, last 11 years, many of them, because naturally many whom I had an opportunity to treat 10 years, 8 years, 7 years down the line, when they come for the checkup, they'll search me out, see me, meet me, just exchange pleasantries. During the course of our interaction with the patients, small tips about personal hygiene, like tooth care, care of the nails, care of the hair, just your clothing, why you should have, the importance of having a bath. How effectively, just with the short stay in the hospital, that has transformed their lives. Not only their lives, they went home, they in turn passed it on to their family members. The net advantage is the whole family is ensured of at least freedom from diseases due to unhygienic living conditions. Many a times it is ignorance. Just a month back, we had a beautiful chubby girl, 2-year-old girl, 20 kilometers from this place,
mm-hmm.
brought in almost near-death situation. 2-year-old girl, 11 kilograms, gasping for breath. Somebody has referred it to our super specialty hospital thinking she has a heart problem.
Mm.
And it came on to my table when I was doing the echocardiogram. I said her heart is fine. She has pus filled up in the whole right side of her lung, which is filled up under pressure. And she is almost nearing her last gasps. That situation, ideally speaking, in Department of Cardiology, you need not tackle these cases. But this is a village. I sought the help of our chief cardiothoracic surgeon. She was kind enough to agree to my request. Came. She put in a tube, that is a treatment for it. And under pressure, this pus came out. 800 cc of pus was drained out. 800 cc. Not 10 or 20 or 50 cc, 800 cc. This 2-year-old kid was carrying that maybe for last 4 or 5 days, just living 20 kilometers away. She settled, we gave her the necessary antibiotics, got okay. During the course of my interaction, I noticed the kid had the nails which were quite big. So I started instructing the mother, I told the sisters also, you should tell them what is the importance of paring your nails at least once a week and taking bath. Then I got a shocking fact. Everybody in their house used to take bath once in 4 days only. I asked why. That is a practice. That's how my parents have been doing. That's how my grandparents have been doing. I thought maybe because of water shortage. No, we have enough water in the house. And then on further inquiry I found the mother of this baby had suffered a pus boil.
Mm-hmm.
And the baby had got infected from that. Now, by the time the child got discharged, we could reason to her the need for cleanliness. And I am proud to state that when she came back for a follow-up, you could see that she was to the letter following out all what we said. All this was said to her not in a way to demean her, but in a way to drive to her senses that what is the role when she has, it is not costing her anything great, but it is helping her by preventing diseases. These are small things.
Prevention is literally better than cure.
Yes. In fact, at some point in time, I had suggested as for Bhagwan's birthday, a program involving our sevadals at least district levels. They go, they interact, they do Narayan Seva, so many other kinds of Seva, they keep doing it at their places. To have a sort of nationwide preventive health education program using audiovisual aids. Unfortunately, there weren't many takers for my idea, but I don't give up so easily.
You are now in the place where there are plenty of takers, so maybe I'll get you here at some other time to discuss that needed.
Yes.
This has been one of our great desires. So I'm glad we are one on the same wavelength as far as this is concerned. And I think we do need to follow this up. We'll take it up seriously, shortly. Meanwhile, please go ahead.
And see, most importantly, if you ask me, while working in the hospital, most of the hospitals, if you feel, after you work 4 years or 5 years, naturally the person who has been so much accustomed or used to, a sense of pride comes up, oh, I have done so many things. Herein, because there you have so many people offering selfless service around you, what Bhagwan in the Holy Bhagavad Gita stated, as the years pass, that sense of doership slowly melts away. I call it the Draupadi phenomena. Till she finally let go of the garment, Bhagwan did not come to her aid. Most of us that way are fortunate that as we grow up with this hospital, we are able to put the Draupadi phenomena into action. We let go. We allow it in his hands. We just are incidental players. We allow it to be guided. This to me is the highest epitome of practical spirituality.
And you have experienced it.
Yes. Day to day, day in and day out I am experiencing it. I am seeing it in my wife. I am seeing it in my children. It didn't require me to go and sit in a forest or inside a cave, go around roaming without clothes, or do some kind of mind and body contorting exercises. I would say this. Never would I have ever felt that this is the way in which spirituality is delivered to you in your day-to-day life.
That's true. That's what he says in the end, Sarva Dharma Pratyachi Mamaikam Sam. It works.
You are in your field and you are realizing his presence. But it's a gradual transformation.
That's
I don't
true,
say
that's
that
true, that's
it
true.
Comes like...
No.
Like
you must be ready to take the first step. Then he makes it happen.
And each step, he draws you a little bit more forward. And each is like what I say, peeling of the layers of onion. No, each you shed off one by one. And then you realize, this is what was... many of us definitely end up reading so many big tomes, that, this and all. But never could we put it to our use, our lives.
Well, since you mentioned the great Bhagavad Gita and reading of tomes, let me wrap up by narrating a small incident. One day when I was with Bhagwan, he was seeing his mail. I was there with him for some work. And when he opened one envelope, it had a copy of a big certificate. He said, "This man has got a certificate for chanting all the 18 chapters of the Bhagavad Gita." He tore it and threw it. He said, "Chanting by heart is not very important. Even a tape recorder can do it. Putting into practice one sloka is far more important," and looked at me significantly. That is what he says to our students also. And in fact, if you go to the summer course of 2000, one sloka of the 12th chapter is the basis for an entire discourse. So I think every second we watch him, we learn something. And every second we are with ourselves, we have to put into practice what we learn. And sometimes he teaches directly, sometimes he teaches through others, like the sevadals, for example. So if we go back to where you started, be observant.
Yes.
And you will see God as the teacher in so many different ways. Am I right, sir?
In all his creations.
Yeah, of course. In the Uddhava Gita, that's what happens.
Yes.
You can learn from everything.
Inanimate and animate, both.
Absolutely. So, Dr. Saab, at this point, I will thank you very much. And I do look forward to having more chats with you. And next time we are together, maybe we can discuss some interesting case histories, of which I'm sure there must be many. But meanwhile, I do think I would like to also talk to you more seriously about spreading the information about healthcare through our service organization. I think that's a very important task which we must jointly address in collaboration with our brothers and sisters in the Seva organization. Thank you once again. And on behalf of listeners, I express my gratitude to you. Jai Sai Ram.
Thank you very much, sir. Jai Sai Ram.
Soham, soham, dhyan karo. साई ध्यान करो
सतगुरु साई ध्यान करो
सतगुरु साई ध्यान करो
सतगुरु साई ध्यान करो
सोहम सोहम ध्यान करो करो
सोहम सोहम ध्यान करो
सतगुरु साई ध्यान करो
सतगुरु साई ध्यान करो
सोहम सोहम ध्यान करो सोहम ब्रह्मा सोहम विष्णु
सोहम ब्रह्मा सोहम विष्णु
सोहम साई ध्यान करो
सोहम साई ध्यान करो
सोहम आत्मा शिव परमात्मा
ब्रह्मानंद से हृदय भरो
सद्गुरु ब्रह्म सनातन हे गे सद्गुरु ब्रह्म सनातन हे दयागन पावन हे परम दयागन पावन हे जन्म ज दुख विनाशन हे जन्म ज दुख विनाशन हे
सनातन है।